Kaya Talk on Kaya 959. On the street, on the air.
It is a minute after 7 o'clock and a very good evening to you. You are listening to Kaya 959 and you are listening to Talk With Myself, Sotomayor. It is the Thursday edition of the show. Of course, as we speak, just the studio now is Gugulethu Mfuphi, who was just with you a moment ago, and of course, as usual, talking all things business. If you missed her show or any other show right here on Kaya 959, simply visit kaya959.co.za and do catch a podcast of all the shows that we have right here on Kaya 959.
Kaya
959
on the street, on the air.
It is now, of course, 2 minutes after 7, and we are together for the next hour until 8 o'clock. It is a Thursday, which is sort of like our Friday because it's the last day of the week for us. And this is when the conversations sometimes do get like a little bit steamy or a little bit grown, a little bit mature. So just warning you, if you have kids with you, you might want to move them out of earshot. So here's what we're talking about this evening. We are talking about sex addiction. We're talking about people who are addicted to sex or people who are very... very different habits when it comes to sex, and they might not necessarily be healthy, or maybe you might be wondering if you or your partner's habits are just healthy and they're normal, or you want to be talking about maybe your own sex addiction or whether or not the way you view sex and how you engage in it is okay and it's healthy and it's psychologically it's normal. And I know sometimes these things can be very subjective because we're all different and we all have different likes and dislikes and who we are. And joining us this evening, we've got John Pedroza, who is a psychologist, and he's just going to be walking us through the conversation, of course, just guiding us through the conversation as well, and taking your calls if you'd like to ask any questions. You can give us a call on 086-000-959. That is 086-000-959. Remember, you are more than welcome to remain anonymous, so you don't necessarily have to put your business out there. You can remain anonymous if you'd like to ask any questions, but you feel like you don't want anyone knowing who you are. We are also on Twitter. You can tweet us at Kaya959, or you can tweet me personally. You can also DM me if you'd like. My handle is at @Sotutu if you'd like to ask a question and you want to keep, you want to stay anonymous as well. You can SMS us as well at 36959. So that's all the ways that you can get in touch with us this evening. And of course, without any further delays, let us say hello to John. A very good evening to you, John, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So first of all, John, let's start with what is sex addiction? Now, obviously, we understand what addiction is, but what can be classified as sex addiction or a person that has sex addiction?
I think it's important to define what sex addiction is, especially since it's so specific and, as you mentioned earlier, very subjective to each individual. If we start by looking at sexual motivation or the inclination for sex, we can conclude that it's a fundamental human behavior. Okay. The problem is that it may have a compulsive variant.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When I say compulsive, what I mean by compulsive is the behavior. So sex can somewhat mimic a form of obsessive compulsive disorder.
Mm-hmm.
When I say obsession or obsessive, what I mean by that is there's these thoughts that take place, which is a psychological and cognitive process. The thoughts are often situated around a fantasy of some sort, a wish of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. The excitation of the fantasy of some sort creates anxiety. In order to put this anxiety at bay, one needs to engage in the compulsion, which is the behavior, the actual sexual activity,
mm-hmm.
which puts the anxiety at bay. So if we're talking about sex addiction, what we're talking about is when it becomes problematic is when it starts to impair one's functioning in some way. When there's hurting oneself, hurting others,
mm-hmm.
there's consequences that come with it. Perhaps one is in a deep, meaningful relationship, and this creates conflict in the relationship, and so one is hurting themselves and others. We can see it as a addiction.
Okay. And John, you said something that stood out for me where you were talking about fantasy. And when we talk about fantasies, couples engage in all sorts of things and they do all sorts of things that have to do with fantasies. But when it comes to a point where the fantasies might be a little bit... I'm putting this in inverted commas and saying somebody might say that the fantasies are not normal. How then do you differentiate between somebody that's, maybe a little bit adventurous sexually or somebody that might just be veering towards what is not considered okay?
You see, I suppose in a relationship between two people, if you're talking about that context, and there's this fantasy that's shared between two people. Now, sharing between two people is a necessary ingredient to create a deep, meaningful relationship. We can call that intimacy. Let's call that the emotional aspect of the relationship. If this fantasy is shared between the two, and there's a consent from each other that perhaps they're not hurting themselves and others, and they're willing to engage in this by themselves, let's just say, we can't say that it's problematic unless it comes to a point where it's impairing one of them or it's impairing others. So that would be when it's problematic, once again, in terms of the addiction itself. When one is imposing on the other one, we can say it's problematic.
Okay. Well, if you are just joining us, it is 6 minutes after seven. You are listening to Kaya 959. You're listening to Talk with myself, Sotumea. And this evening we're talking about sex addiction. And we are talking about how it presents itself in some people. We're talking about how to manage it. And we're also talking to people that might be looking for help, because there are people that are genuinely probably trying to look for help and wondering if their behavior is normal. And we're also talking about unique sexual behaviors that might be a problem, especially if they present as a problem between you and a loved one, and you're just looking for ways to cope with it or to work around it. You can give us a call on 086-000-959. You can drop us an SMS, 36959. You are more than welcome to tweet us at Kaya959, or you can tweet me personally. My handle is at Soto2 if you'd like to ask any questions. And of course, joining us this evening, we've got John Pedrosa, who is a psychologist, and he's just helping us through this conversation. Now, John, we talked about people that are in relationships, or people that are, you know, where it's a pair, it's two people that are working through whatever it is in the sense what they engage in. But what happens when somebody says that, you know, I remember many weeks ago, about 6 weeks ago or so, we had somebody that gave us a call and was asking about the number of times that that his son was masturbating at the time. And I think, you know, he basically thought that it might not be normal. Is it okay for that to happen? So, do we find that there might be somebody who masturbates a lot more than what is normal? And how do we figure out what is normal?
So it's important to distinguish sexual activity being that in relation to somebody, let's just say, but sexual activity can also be in relation to that of objects, for example, clothing, and also sexual activity towards oneself, as you said, masturbation.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at a criteria, for example, and I'll just give a brief criteria. We're looking at that compulsive aspect of unsatisfying pickups, perhaps implying a constant and maybe insatiable search for multiple partners. We're looking at unsatisfying compulsive sexuality in which, say, the other is reduced to a state of maybe a partial object, that of dismissing the other as a human individual. But masturbation as well can be compulsive if we're looking at perhaps 15 times a day, or between 5 and 15 times a day, which sometimes leads to injury or irritation of the skin on physical levels. It can create intense feeling of fatigue, and of course it can spill into our social and professional context, as well as the school environment, etc. So it really impairs one's functioning.
Mm-hmm.
There also becomes this compulsive fixation on partners, on oneself as well. There's this multiple compulsive constant seeking of intensity of these feelings, this excitement through new sexual adventures, even if these sexual adventures that are masturbating.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is impairing one's functioning, then it can become a problem. So I would say that would be the fine line between when something would be considered normal and not so normal.
Okay. And how do you normally, I mean, in your practice, I'm sure every now and then you do see people that might be battling with sex addiction. How does it normally manifest? Like, you know, how does it present itself in many cases?
So if we look at it, as I mentioned before, there's the obsession and the compulsion.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is, if we're looking at the sexual activity itself, the compulsion, we're looking at a behavior. We're talking about a manifestation of behavior that's being acted upon. In other words, that we can term the symptom. So there are symptoms. Now, normally the symptoms stem from something deeper that's happening internally. Okay. So normally what happens is, we often find that there's a masking of some sort, like any addiction. There's this access a defense mechanism to avoid something. However, this defense mechanism is very much in relation to that of the other if one is engaging in sexual activities with other people. So there's usually phases that take place. We can talk about the phase of obsession during which, in response to maybe existential difficulties, the subject's totally absorbed by sexual preoccupations. That would be the thoughts, the wishes, the fantasies, the desires, the needs, perhaps. And then we look at a phase of ritualization. There's a ritual that takes place. Okay, there's an execution of rituals that precede the sexual behavior. So this happens before the sexual behavior. There's this imagining of some sort. Now, the problem with that is that the fantasy becomes this idealization. In other words, idealization meaning all perfect. Okay. Then we're looking at the sense of sexual activity, which leads to perhaps temporary relief of some sort. Because if we think about sex as an innate human condition, what we're saying is that we have this built-in mechanism for reproduction. However, through the years, research has also shown that it does not only serve for reproduction purposes. However, if we seek sexual activity, there's a form of pleasure there because sexual encounters are pleasurable. The implicit message of it being pleasurable is that we're avoiding unpleasure, if that makes sense. Okay. So then what happens is in these processes or phases, we usually get this despair with sentiment of an incapacity to control one's own behavior when this happens. And what happens is that that spills out to the symptom in which the behavior starts to take place and one starts to engage in these activities.
Okay. Well, if you are just joining us, it is 12 minutes after 7. You are listening to Kaya 959. The other voice that you're listening to is of John Pedrosa, who is a psychologist. And, of course, he's just talking us through sex addiction, which is what we're talking about this evening. And we are taking your calls if you'd like to ask any questions about, you know, any sexual behavior that you feel might not be quite okay, or maybe you're not okay with that particular sexual behavior. You can give us a call on 086-000-0959. And we are taking your SMSs on 36959. We're taking your tweets on at Kaya on Air. And you can tweet me as well. My handle is @Sotutu and ask any questions that you'd like to this evening around sexual behavior. John, I suppose, you know, the question that it's a very simple question and might not make, you know, it might seem very simplistic. But somebody would say, what causes it? I mean, I know you touched a bit on it, that sometimes, you know, sometimes you are avoiding something else and then it comes out in that form. But generally, what causes sex addiction?
Right. So usually what we're looking at is we're looking at an underlying fear of abandonment, for example. So there's the sense of not having an integrated sense of self, let's just say. This is where the idealization comes in, but there's also the evaluation. So in other words, if I engage in the fantasy or the wish for the sexual experience in my fantasy is that of all being perfect. However, when one engages in the sexual activity, that is not the person itself is deficiencies, they're human, they're not all perfect. So what happens is the activity never adds up to the fantasy, hence one has to engage in that again to capture that of being in line with the fantasy. So one usually has this deep-seated fear of abandonment, for example, that one engages in. Okay, so there's the sense of not being enough, right? The sense of feeling perhaps disintegrated in one's identity, for example. So we can get all sorts of things, masking, depression, things like that. Now, normally what happens is because we're seeking a partner, let's just say, to engage in sexual behavior, what happens is if we're looking at deep, meaningful relationships require intimacy. Intimacy requires a sense of vulnerability. Vulnerability means admitting to something. In other words, one is fully exposed if one engages in vulnerability. Now, if one has a fragile sense of self and feels exposed, one can perceive that as a threat to oneself. Okay? So what one does is to avoid the feelings that one has or the affective states, which serves as self-preservation, this defense, is that instead of facing these emotional states and feeling them and looking at them, we engage in a process of denial in which we try to isolate these emotional effects in some way. So there's a denial that takes place there. The problem with the denial and denying the emotional states, and the reason we do this is because it's not in keeping with the ideal sense of self, the sense of omnipotence, idealization, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So we avoid these. These deceptions and frustrations with reality, they allow for a dismissal, if you will, of the other person. In other words, we start engaging in this behavior of objectifying
mm-hmm.
the person. Right. And this makes it easier or allows one to discard the other. So there's this need for this connection with somebody. However, connecting with somebody means admitting that this person has faults.
Exactly.
The faults are not in line with the idealization in one's fantasy,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? So we avoid this by engaging in sexual encounters, sexual behaviors as advances to connect with others. And this usually stems from a sense of low self-esteem at times, avoiding looking at this this root that motivates this kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure, that's very interesting. So just from low self-esteem, somebody could, you know, this might be the way that they cope with low self-esteem.
Right. It can be, because if we're thinking about connecting on a deep, meaningful level with somebody with a low self-esteem perhaps has this deep-seated fear of abandonment. Well, they're going to abandon me anyway, because when they see me for who I really am,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like I'm exposed then. So instead of them abandoning me, what I'll do is I'll search these instant gratifications that make me feel alive and excited on some level, having never to go through the abandonment itself. However, the abandonment is how one is viewing oneself, or perhaps mm-hmm. the feeling one has this low self-esteem of some sort, which really becomes this vicious cycle. And one loses meaning, one loses an idea of what long-term fulfillment is really about, and it just becomes the cycle that just continues over and over.
So how do you deal with it? So if someone comes into your practice, John, and they recognize that maybe I might have a problem, how do we deal with it? Like, if you want to work on it and deal with, you know, when you have a problem with alcohol addiction, you know where to turn, you know, people turn to AA, you know, when you've got a drug addiction, this is, you know, you go into rehab. But how do you actually deal with sex addiction? And as well, I can imagine that it also, there's a stigmatization as well that goes with that.
Sure. So, as I mentioned before, there's the symptoms, which is usually the manifestation of something deeper that's going on. That's the behavior. That's when it leaves oneself, if we're talking about the interplay between internal and external. When something leaves oneself, it becomes the behavior, the symptom. Now, treating the symptom is one thing that we might do. However, in the process of psychotherapy, we do need to get to the root of what is causing this. If we get to the root of what is causing this, you'll find that the symptom begins to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So as I mentioned before, there's usually a profound fear or loss of identity or sense of self at the core of these activities. Okay. You'll find there's certain sexual practices with sexual objects, perhaps the object being the person as well. What happens is this becomes like a drug that mm-hmm. the patient uses to medicate. In other words, there's a sense of fear of the self-disintegration. So I medicate that by feeling excited. It becomes an overcompensation. Usually this stems from childhood, during the efforts to separate from perhaps paternal and maternal figures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one becomes enmeshed when they're young. In other words, this enmeshment makes it difficult for one to separate. Hence, I seek somebody or a partner all the time to feel that enmeshment and that connection in some way mm-hmm. to those paternal and maternal figures. Okay, so this acts as a defense. It's an attempt to repair defect in oneself that's connected to, say, an incapacity to manage the experience of these partial emotional states that one is, or these painful emotional states that one is managing at the time. So what one does is one designs this sense of false sense of self, if you want to call it that,
mm-hmm.
and this starts to act as a defense mechanism. So the defense mechanism is the symptom itself, the sexual activity. But getting to the root means having to look at things such as the affective immaturity. When I say affective, I mean emotional immaturity, insecurity that one has. There's looking at the intolerance of frustration. In other words, one has low frustration tolerance for these things. There's the tendency of the acting out, which is the behavior. And then there's the difficulties with stability, because stability is reliability over time, which would build the deep meaningful relationship, which requires the vulnerability, and there's a fear there of the vulnerability. Hence, I overcompensate by engaging in these sexual behaviors, and what you usually find is there's masked depression.
That goes with it.
Right.
Okay. So, John, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation, and hopefully we can start talking about pornography as well. When people are addicted to pornography, is it the same as sex addiction? Is it different? Is it, you know, is it usually the same underlying causes? But that's a conversation that we'll be having after we take a short break. If you are just joining us, you are listening to Kaya 959, and you are listening to Talk With Myself, Sotumeya. And, of course, as usual, we are together until 8 o'clock, and this evening we're talking about sex addiction, and we're also talking about all sorts of sexual behaviors that might sometimes, you know, it's reckless sexual behavior. Sometimes it manifests itself as addiction to pornography. Sometimes the actual act. Sometimes it's the over masturbation. You know, that's what we're talking about this evening. If you would like to give us a call, if you're looking for some advice, or if you're looking for a listening ear and just some sort of guidance with regards to that, you can give us a call on 086-00-00959. That is 086-00-00959. Remember, you can SMS us 36959, and you can tweet us at Kaya on Air, or you can tweet me personally. My handle is @Sotutu if you'd like to send me a DM. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we continue with the conversation.
Kaya Talk, Monday to Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m.
It is 24 minutes after 7. You are listening to Kaya 959, and you are listening to Talk With Myself, Sotumeya. As usual, we are together until 8 o'clock, and today is a Thursday, which is pretty much our Friday, and this is when conversations do become a little bit more mature. Just to give you a warning, if you're just joining us, that you might want to keep the little ones out of earshot. And this evening, we are joined by John Pedroza, who is a psychologist, and we're talking about sex addiction, and we are talking about all sorts of all manner of sex addiction. If you would like to give us a call, if you're looking for maybe for a bit of advice, if you want to share a story with us, or you're just looking for a listening ear, you can give us a call on 086-00-00959. We've got Anonymous giving us a call. Anonymous, good evening, and thank you so much for joining us.
Evening, ma'am. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. And you, Anonymous?
All right, man. I was just wondering if I can ask, what could be the cause of someone to have an early releasing when you're having sex?
So like early ejaculation?
Yes.
Let's just talk to John a little bit. I'm not sure if, John, does that tie in, or are you in the position to answer the question?
So usually what would happen is we'd be looking at a sexual dysfunction in that case, a physiological dysfunction, in which one would perhaps have to go see a general practitioner, maybe perhaps in terms of that, and there'd have to be physical assessments according to that. But sometimes it can be psychological as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's that sense of perhaps the fear of not being able to perform, or not being able to perform long enough, let's say that. But it usually is manifestation of physical symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it can be psychological, but it can also be physical. So in this case, would you say the first thing to do would be to go to a GP?
I would say perhaps go to a GP, have a physical examination,
mm-hmm.
and if there are no physical symptoms found or manifestations found, then perhaps to go see a clinical psychologist, and once again, that would stem from the root of something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anonymous, maybe see a GP in...
All right, thank you so much.
All right, thank you very much for joining us, Anonymous. This evening we're talking about sexual addiction. If you'd like to give us a call, please, it's 086-00-00959. SMS is on 36959, and tweets on @KayaOnAir, or on my personal handle @Sotutu. We're talking about sexual addiction and sexual dysfunction in that sense, psychologically. So whether or not somebody that masturbates too much, somebody that engages in reckless sexual behavior, somebody that watches too much, much pornography, you know, somebody that basically has a very, what some people might call unhealthy relationship with sex. That's what we're talking about this evening, and those are the calls that we're taking this evening. If you'd like to get any, you know, some sort of advice from Jen Pedroza, who is the psychologist we're talking to this evening. John, let's talk a bit about pornography, because that's another one that always comes up, where people might be addicted to pornography. At what point would you say that a person is addicted to porn?
I think it's important to take into account as well that pornography has become widely accessible as well due to the internet and things like that. Now, if we think about ourselves watching a screen, there is sort of a distancing effect that takes place. In other words, I'm not engaging in real relationships, or I'm not associating myself with real intimacy. Once again, it's engaging in that fantasy. You know, it's almost like when somebody watches a movie and they dissociate for that time being of the movie. Mm-hmm. Engage in that sense of fantasy, we get drawn into the movie. Pornography works the same way in that we watch it, however we use it for sexual arousal in some cases. Pornography, watching pornography per se, if we're talking about a couple, let's say we're talking about a couple that's in a deep, meaningful relationship, a loving relationship, and together they both decide that they enjoy watching pornography.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They're not hurting themselves, they're not hurting with others, they have an understanding, a mutual psychological understanding between one another. It also happens, as I mentioned earlier, in that how much time does one spend on watching pornography? Can one engage in sexual encounters without the object of pornography as well?
Okay.
There's the sense of impairing one's functioning. Am I spending most of my day watching pornography? Am I unable to engage in real activities that require performance? So in other words, one is engaging in this fantasy and clinging to the fantasy. The problem, the reason for that is that it usually stems from deep-seated feelings of inferiority of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
When we say inferiority, what we're talking about is there's a loss of control there. In other words, the sexual activity can never be controlled in the way that one has in one's fantasy.
Mm.
In other words, it plays out differently because there's another party there. However, if I engage in pornography and watching pornography, the fantasy can't be the same way as in my mind because I'm in control there. So there's that overcompensation of being in control, watching this, imagining these deep desires, needs, and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So is it as well, you know, because some people will say that, you know, people who watch a lot of pornography are also people who have got that problems with that voyeuristic behavior, where it wanting to look from the outside in, almost like a peeping Tom. Is it that same effect as well, or not necessarily?
Are you asking if they have, if they share the same symptoms?
Exactly, yeah. As somebody who would most likely be, especially somebody that is addicted to porn, that is watching porn a lot. I mean, somebody that spends a lot of money on porn. Do they have the same behavior as somebody that would then turn out to be like a peeping Tom?
You see, it depends if they're engaging in that behavior as well. If they're not, if they're merely watching, because as humans, we are all gratified by different things. You know, some people are gratified by audio, some people are gratified by visual, some people are gratified by kinesthetic, which is the touch and things like that. We're all different in that way. So perhaps one gains excitation from watching something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's almost as if we're talking about one using an object of clothing, for example, if one wears the clothing of another sex and is aroused by it.
Mm-hmm.
Which may be a fetish of some sort. There's the object we're talking about there. So one would, by engaging in that behavior, one is gratified in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So it works the same. There are some people that may be more gratified by images and things like that. But excessive pornography, once again, if it's impairing functioning and it causes anxiety of some sort, that in order to put this anxiety at bay, I've got to keep engaging in it, and it becomes a psychic dynamic, which becomes a vicious circle, then it becomes a problem.
Okay. Well, we are still taking your calls on 086-000-959. And this evening we're talking to John Pedroza, who is a psychologist, and we're talking about sex addiction. We've got Anonymous giving us a call. Anonymous, good evening, and thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks, and you?
I'm well, thanks. I just want to know, like, what effect does pornography have on, like, I recently found my nephew,
mm-hmm,
watching porn on his phone, and I just want to know what are the long-term effects, especially into adulthood, He's like 13 years old. So I just want to know how bad can that be for kids as young as that?
As in, can he get addicted to watching porn at that age?
At that age, going into marriage life, can it have some sort of effect, or is it just a kid thing that can eventually go away?
Okay, so John, when we're talking about, well, I suppose a very early teen at 13 watching pornography, do we deem that as normal teen behavior, or could it have an impact long term?
Remember, if we're talking about a 13-year-old, we're talking about a developmental phase that the teen may be going through. This is a stage where one starts to identify, one starts to figure out oneself, one starts to explore oneself, one becomes aware, there's an awareness of the sexual organs, sex, what it means in society, etc. So one engages in this process of self-exploration, which I would say is a normal process of development, to engage in that, which is how one learns about it on some level, or learns about their own body on some level. However, if we're talking about long-term effects, and we're talking about watching pornography excessively from that age and it becoming addiction, what we're looking at is there's an excitation in terms of watching pornography. In other words, we start to feel sexually aroused. There's a heightened state of arousal that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally when a heightened state of arousal takes place, the brain starts to, on a physical level, the brain starts to release endorphins that make us feel good, like
mm-hmm.
when we eat chocolate, when we engage in pleasurable activities, thrill-seeking, we get the sense of release of dopamine and endorphins that make us feel good. Now, there's such a thing as sensitization and desensitization. Now, if one engages in something which is not habit, which is once off, maybe once, twice, three times, one is sensitized to that. What I mean by that is that if we engage in it enough times, we become desensitized to it. In other words, we're not sensitive to it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's like watching violence on TV all the time. It becomes a habit. It becomes normal for one. In other words, one can watch any violent event and
it won't shake you.
Right, and it doesn't shake them. So one can become desensitized to pornography. Now, the problem with becoming desensitized, if we use drug addiction as an example, it's like building tolerance. In other words, I use this substance every often, so often, or every day, whatever it might be. The problem with that is that to feel the same effect, once you build tolerance,
you're going to have to do more.
Right. You need to increase the use of it to feel the same effect. Now, if one is engaging in habits, these release of dopamine, endorphins, and eventually one builds tolerance to it. They become desensitized to it. In other words, I have to gauge in more and more and more of that. Eventually, the long-term effects, we can look at it becoming an addiction.
Okay. So if we're talking about a 13-year-old, so at that age, so if you're watching porn at that age, it can lead to sex addiction or porn addiction?
You see, like I said, there is that fine line, because one would be the duration that the child has been watching the porn.
Mm-hmm.
One would be how often does one watch the porn and engage in it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it impairing one's functioning? Because there's the fine line between, like I said, the self-exploration and learning about those things. Because getting to that age, we start to become aware.
You're right.
And we want to explore and we want to learn our bodies and things like that. So it just depends whether it's becoming a habit or not. Now, what happens is that when you engage in that fantasy as well, you start withdrawing yourself. In other words, one is less likely to engage in deep, meaningful relationships. It's the same thing that we see with teens these days who are on their phones all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They engage in that sense of the phone, but the phone can become a habit to the detriment of not connecting with others, not being emotionally available in the here and now with people. And then it does become problematic, because one starts to isolate oneself, withdraw from real interactions, and then it does become a problem. So it can become a problem, and it can become an addiction. I think it's important for parents to be very open with their children, and to create a platform or a holding environment where children feel comfortable enough to speak about these things, so that they're less likely to engage in self-exploration by themselves, but rather to have a discussion about self-exploration, what is acceptable or socially acceptable, what isn't, when it becomes a problem, when it isn't. So parents, I think education or psychoeducation on these issues is very important.
Okay. Anonymous, I hope that helps.
Yeah, thank you so much. Okay. Very informative.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for calling us, Anonymous. If you're just joining us, it is almost 20 minutes to 8. You're listening to Kaya 959 and you are listening to Talk With Myself, Sotomayor. We have just 20 minutes between us. And of course, joining us on the line is John Pedrosa, who is a psychologist. And we are talking about sex addiction this evening. We're talking about all manner of sexual addiction, whether it is pornography, whether it is the actual act, whether it is, you know, very reckless behavior, because there are people who engage in reckless behavior, and that too can be some sort of addiction. And hopefully we can talk about that as well when we come back from the break. So that's the conversation we are having this evening. If you would like to give us a call, if you'd like to add to the conversation, if you'd like to ask any questions, or if you're just looking for, you know, just a listening ear or a bit of guidance around the issue, the number to dial is 086-000-0959. Remember, you can always drop us an SMS 36959. You can tweet us at Kaya on Air, or you can tweet me personally. My handle is at Sotutu if you'd like to. And of course, you can remain anonymous. You don't have to tell us who you are, and you can DM me as well, and I will keep you anonymous as well. Before we go to break, John, we've got a couple of tweets. I'm not sure if it's completely related to what we're talking about, but there's somebody here who says, how long must a normal sex round last? Like, what is considered normal in terms of having sex and one, I suppose, what you call a round?
So in the activity itself, how long should one engage in a sexual
encounter?
That I'm understanding the question.
Yes, yeah.
Right. So this becomes very subjective, of course. This is all based on, you know, psychological expectations within a relationship. I'm assuming you're talking within a relationship, perhaps not. But this is purely subjective according to the person and the other person. How that happens in terms of reaching climax, you know, it's different for everybody. So that's a very difficult question to answer. It's a very subjective question.
So at what point would you say that maybe it's too long? You know, like if you're engaged for like 30 minutes, because normally they say that it's actually really only like 5-10 minutes. If it's going beyond that, would you say, oh my gosh, like that is very long?
You see, it depends what one considers pleasurable. For some people, they take long to climax, for others not. But if we're taking long to the point where, say, for instance, it's affecting perhaps the other person and it becomes painful after a while, then we're looking at, and one is unable to climax, then we're looking at a sexual dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that would require physical attendance.
Okay. Let's take a short break, John. When we come back, we're going to continue taking those calls on 086-000-0959.
Kaya Talk on Kaya 959. On the street, on the air.
It is almost 7:45. You're listening to Kaya 959. We are still taking your calls on 086-000-0959. This evening, we're joined by John Pedrosa, who is a psychologist, and we're talking about sex addiction and taking those calls, taking those SMSs as well on 36959, as well as your tweets on at Kaya 959, at Kaya on Air, as well as my personal handle at Sotutu. Let's take another caller. Anonymous, good evening, and thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks, and you?
I'm good. This topic is very close to my heart, and it's funny enough that the psychologist actually mentioned the drug addiction part and the sexual addiction part, you know, which is basically pornography. You know what? I'll be very honest with you. For a couple of years, I've actually been struggling myself, you know.
With sex addiction or pornography in particular?
You know what? I can actually say both, you know. And at some point, it actually did lead to a point where, you know, for me to find a substitute, to actually start doing stuff like doping. You know, because you want to try and clear out the one, you try and substitute the one for the other one, you know. And trust me, it's a heavy addiction. a head addiction. And people might think it's just a light topic that you're talking about, you know. You know what? I just parked my car and accidentally just turned into Kaya. And yeah. And you know what? People need to take this thing very, very seriously.
Addiction is never easy.
You know what? It's so sensitive to a point that this morning I had to. Funny enough, I was looking at my PC and I said, you know what? Whatever is stuffed up in my PC, let me just delete it. Do I have the courage to do it?
Sure.
And you know what? I just went straight to my PC and I deleted everything.
Mm.
And I said to myself, yeah.
I was going
to
ask you, have you seen a psychologist, Anonymous, or is this something that you're working through by yourself?
Yes. You know what? I've actually seen a therapist twice already.
Mm. Mm.
My first therapist knows about it. My second therapist doesn't know about it. And, you know, actually talking to you, I wish I'd actually have, what's the word I want to use? I wish I'd actually come live on air and actually talk to people about this and tell them how serious it is. Yes, I've seen a therapist for the first time. And it actually got me into trouble, you know?
What do you mean it got you into trouble?
Ooh, yeah, it's quite sensitive because it got me into trouble to a point where at some point I was accused of trying to do X, Y, Z to my exes, yeah, you know, stuff like that, you know.
Sure.
And I got heavily depressed over that, you know, and there's a lot of unseen things that happened between those spaces where when I actually sit back now and think about it and try and digest everything, I actually realize that even in the space that I was in with that particular person, which is my ex's daughter, basically, herself, she had a little part of it to play with, and I'm actually so happy that at some point that I didn't even go further, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I sit back and I think that, ooh, imagine if I would have attempted to go further, how much trouble would I have got myself
into,
you know.
Anonymous.
And, yeah, no, it's a very sensitive thing, you know, and it's very close to my heart because there's a point where the healing process took me a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
It took me such a long time where instead of me trying to blame the next part or myself, I had to sit down and look at everything and see how it affected everything around me. And I realized that, you know what, addiction comes in so many forms because if you try and escape from the one, you go to the other one to find another escape.
A substitute. Well, thank you, Anonymous, for sharing your story with us, and hopefully you continue on this journey of healing.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, at some point, I really wish I could come on air and heal other people. You know, the reason why I actually accepted the call with us is because I really wish I could heal other people so they can actually, you know, sometimes guilt is another thing, you know.
Mm.
But if you have guilt and you don't find a solution, then it's another problem.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go through it and then you find a solution.
Mm. Well, I'm going to put you back to our producer and maybe he can take your details and maybe we can have you on the show for another time. So I'm going to put you back to our producer, Ernest, who will take your details. But thank you very much for sharing your story. Otherwise, we are still taking more calls on 086-00-00-959. We've got another anonymous caller. Anonymous, good evening and thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, yourself?
Good, thank you.
I'm okay. I don't know if it's an addiction or not. I was in a relationship while I was the father of my kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we were like having sex like every day. So he like passed on. So I was like, okay, had to like stay back and not have sex. But I just realized when I'm alone, I like have these cravings because like I'm recently dating, but it's a long distance relationship, and it's scary because sometimes I'm not with him, but I do have like cravings to have like sex and he's not around. Like,
is that always when you are, so at every point when you are alone, but every now and, or every now and then?
Yes, like I've got like cravings, like.
When you are alone, every time you are alone?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, like I'm alone and like, do I call him? Do I go over there? Like, it's sometimes a bit scary because like you don't know what a person might think about you, what kind of a person that you are. Because I've been used to like having sex like every day, so
okay.
Am I having a problem or?
Let's find out from the doctor, from the psychologist. Let's find out from John Pedrosa, who's the psychologist joining us. John, is it a problem?
So as we mentioned earlier, as what I'm hearing Anonymous say, we can hear that there's a sense of feeling distressed about it, hence the need to phone in, hence the need to bring this across or bring this point across. There's something that is distressing about it for oneself. In other words, these cravings, is it causing one to feel inferior in some ways? Is it causing one anxiety, extreme anxiety? Because then that is definitely a problem, but there's also that fine line between understanding long-distance relationships and the human condition of having needs as well.
Mm-hmm.
One can have needs, but when these needs become detrimental to oneself, then it can be a problem that's developing.
So she could be developing a problem?
Yes, in terms of these cravings and things like that cause anxiety, then it would be a problem, yes.
Okay. So let's take some tweets that we received. I've got somebody who sent me a DM that says, I'd like to ask John a question. I think I had a masturbation addiction, but I'd only masturbate on weekends about 3 times a day. And I always watch porn whenever I masturbate, but now I no longer do. But I'd like to know if there is a long-term effect in terms of having low sperm count and, you know, not being able to have kids in the future. If you have been masturbating for so much, so many times every weekend.
So once again, that sounds like a physiological question. If one is masturbating regularly 3 times a day on weekends, that doesn't mean that one will be infertile or watching porn, or that one will put one in a position of having an inability to have a child.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think it has an effect on sperm count. But once again, if one wants to know if one is fertile, one would probably be referred to a GP.
Okay, so that you need to find out from the GP. But if somebody's masturbating 3 times every weekend, that could be a problem that's also developing, right? Because that's quite a bit, 3 times, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's not a problem, or could it be a problem?
You see, what we would take into consideration, as I mentioned earlier, there's a compulsive aspect that comes with it between 5 and 15 times a day, let's just say,
mm-hmm.
which leads up to injury, irritation. If one is doing it 3 times a day and only on weekends, we have to take into account the duration. Has it been long-term, just on weekends and 3 times a day?
Mm-hmm.
If it's becoming more and more, there's that sense, you know, it's almost like I said about earlier about doing drugs, you know, one will engage in this on weekends,
mm-hmm.
but suddenly this starts to become a Monday now as well, or it starts to become while I'm at work as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, then it starts to impair functioning in different contexts, and then it does become a problem.
Okay. Well, we've got another tweet here, but I suppose this person is just telling us about, you know, how they, him and his partner use, or she and her partner, I'm not sure if it's a guy or girl, they use sex to spice up the relationship, and says, I watch porn movies with my wife in order to spice up our sex. That alone helps us a lot, because when I'm at work during lunch, I send her naughty pictures of people who are having sex in the way that it's going to help us to do different positions. And you did say earlier on, you know, that if this is something that's between you and your partner and you guys have an agreement in the sense that you both enjoy this, it's not a problem, right? You know, because if that's how you know, it's how you guys have fun, you know, like your bedroom tactics, then it's completely different. It's only a problem if it starts affecting the other person negatively.
Right, right. Look, if we can think about for a second for a triangle that's three-sided, for example. On the one side, we've got intimacy, which is the emotional aspect of the relationship. On the other end, we've got commitment, which would be the psychological aspect of the relationship. Psychological being because commitment is a cognitive process, a decision to stay together. if we want to call it that. And then on the other side of the triangle, we can say passion, which is passion is an action. It's a behavior of some sort. In other words, when people argue, when people engage in sharing that vulnerability that creates deep, meaningful relationships, they're operating on the intimacy corner. Right. When they have this decision to stay together, they're operating on the commitment side of things. When they engage in behaviors, for example, like sexual acts, even merely doing things together, date night, things like that, we can call that passion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is just a method of evaluating one's relationship. One can look at these aspects. And normally what happens is that you'll find that in relationships, for example, if you lack intimacy and commitment, chances are you probably only have passion. This is what we call puppy love or infatuation or deliverance phase.
Mm.
If you've got a relationship where it lacks commitment and passion, you're basically looking at intimacy. It's sort of like a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then if you don't have intimacy and passion and you've only got commitment, that's sort of like the olden day relationships where, you know, even if I'm being abused, my decision to stay there is what's important, right? Now, normally what should happen is there should be a balance of all three. Now, the balance can be different. It can be 20%, 20%, 20%, or it can be 100, 100, 100. It just depends. But one can evaluate that and look at where they are lacking in the relationship. So in this case, I would say their passion is quite high, in other words. Right. But also the act of doing things requires vulnerability as well. And if couples are doing things together that please one another, they're building intimacy. There's an emotional connection there, that sense of being able to be honest with each other about what one likes and the other one reciprocates and the other one understands that, and there's that mutual understanding of some sort. So I think between couples, it's very subjective as well, you know, but that's one way of them evaluating the relationship. Is the relationship, perhaps I've seen relationships where the passion is becoming too much and there's no intimacy and no commitment, you know? But this is just one method of evaluating one's relationship to see what is sort of balanced and what isn't.
Okay. Well, if you are just joining us, we are towards the end of the show now, literally only 4 minutes left of the show. And this evening we've been talking to John Pedroza, who is a psychologist. And we've been talking about sex addiction and, of course, taking your calls on 086-000-959. We had a caller, John, earlier on, who was basically relaying his story about sex addiction. And I think he did touch on something that you might have said earlier on as well, where he talked a little bit about depression. And you did say that at times depression can present itself in a way of sexual addiction.
Right. So I wanted to actually comment on what he was talking about. He mentioned a few significant points. One was being that of replacing addiction for another addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're looking at his symptoms, that's a clear indication that it stems from a root. In other words, if you only treat the symptom, you're going to replace the symptom with another symptom, with another symptom, and so on. You never get to the root of it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
As to what prompts these symptoms or the manifestation. Now, usually engaging in these activities usually has benefits. The benefits may be short-term or instant gratification, one of them being pleasure, one of being a sense of self-reassurance of some sort or validation, and then there's that manic excitement, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that, like drugs, is when you engage in that, you experience those benefits as well. The problem is there's the come down from the benefits.
Yeah.
And this is the same thing, the come down from the sexual behavior, is that one experiences sadness, there's a sense of remorse, feelings of shame and guilt, as you mentioned, guilt. There's that sense of low self-esteem, not being enough,
mm-hmm.
a painful sense of failure in some way. And then there, due to all of these, there's that loss of meaning. And all these symptoms create problematic connections to that of the other with other people, because now what happens is when I experience these feelings, rather than viewing these feelings as emotional indicators that guide me to say there's something deeper here going on, instead I avoid these uncomfortable feelings, and once again I go back to the top of the benefits and I engage in the activity again, and it becomes the cyclic dynamic that becomes a vicious cycle that one can't break, being habit.
Okay, sure, John. That, I think you've said a mouthful. You know, and I think it's one of those things where we don't at least we don't talk enough about sexual addiction. Sometimes it's very taboo, you know. I mean, when somebody's got like a drug addiction or alcohol addiction, sometimes it's easier to talk about those versus somebody saying that I have a sexual addiction. But thank you so much for joining us and staying the hour with us and just trying to talk us through it. I know it's a much bigger conversation that can't fit into an hour, but still, thank you very much for joining us for the hour. And hopefully we can call on you again when we have these difficult conversations.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you very much, John. So that was John Pedrosa, who is a psychologist, and he was joining us this evening talking about sex addiction. And that's it from us. I'm back on Monday, same time, same place, right here on Kaya 959. From me, Sutomea, it is good night, and do enjoy the rest of your evening.
Kaya Talk on Kaya 959. On the street, on the air.